Welcome to the Two Cities Podcast, a podcast about theology, culture, and discipleship. And this is episode 216. In this episode, we're talking about trauma-informed preaching with Dr. Matthew Kim. Dr. Matthew Kim is the professor of practical theology and the holder of the Hubert H. and Gladys S. Rayborn Chair of Pastoral Leadership at George Truett Theological Seminary at Baylor University. Team members on the episode from the two cities include Dr. John Anthony Dunn, Dr. Grace Singling Ng, and me, Dr. Madison Pierce. So, John, Grace, what struck you in our conversation with Dr. Kim?
So I really appreciated the way that Dr. Kim just thought compassionately about this topic from his own experience of suffering, and also just understanding how different people in his congregation may be struggling, being sensitive and attuned to that. I think, just seeing his heart as a preacher and as a pastor was really apparent throughout the conversation, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I enjoyed so much about this conversation and its various facets and the different topics that we discussed as it pertains to trauma-informed preaching. And I think one of the things that I really appreciated that I was thinking about quite a lot as he was talking was when we were talking about when we might tell stories about our own experiences of trauma or pain, and what might be going on if that were to delve into, like, unfortunately, like being manipulative with our own stories. And the way he handled that and talked about that, I thought was actually really interesting. And it was just an angle that I kind of wasn't expecting to kind of talk about in this episode. And I found that to be really interesting. I thought what he shared about kind of like hyperbole and exaggeration to be quite interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I really appreciated also Matt talking about being attentive to what texts are saying. I mean, as someone schooled in sort of historical grammatical approaches and expository preaching and all of that, it feels right. But at the same time, because of my particular personality type, I tend to see a lot of pain in texts. And so it helps me to think about when I'm preaching going forward to make sure that it's not me reading pain into text, and maybe want to be a little more attentive there. So if you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. And if you appreciate what we do here at the Two Cities, please consider joining our Patreon community to support our work and receive bonus content. Look for us on Patreon, follow us on X, Facebook, Instagram, or visit us at our website at thetwocities.com. And with that, here's our conversation with Dr. Matthew Kim. Well, Dr. Kim, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
It's great to be with you, everyone. Thank you.
We're really excited to have you on. We're in a series on trauma, as our listeners know, and we've been working through various kinds of traumatic experiences. And we've now made our sort of pivot towards thinking about, okay, we've become more trauma-informed. We understand what's happening to our bodies. We understand different sources of trauma. But now we want to do various practices better. And so that is where you come in. You have your book, Preaching to People in Pain. And we'd love to hear a little bit about who you are and how you ended up working on this particular project.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much. I was born and raised in Chicago as the oldest of three sons, and grew up there until I was 18. Went off to college in Minnesota at Carleton College, and then went off to seminary, and then did some doctoral studies. Came back to the States and pastored a church for a while as a senior pastor, and then eventually God led me back to Gordon-Conwell, where I had done my MDiv training to teach. And so I was there for the last 10 years. And then 2 years ago, God moved us to Waco, Texas, which I never thought we would be in this part of the country. But The Lord is gracious, and my wife and three kids enjoy it here very much. So we're very thankful. Trauma and pain and suffering, all those kinds of topics really emerged in my mind very centrally when my brother was murdered in 2015. And that was really the moment where I thought about my church experience, but not immediately after this all happened. But I just thought about what it meant for listeners to come into a sanctuary and having real life issues and having nowhere to really express it. I mean, the preacher can only do so much in anticipating what kinds of pains are in the room. But I thought about what it would be like for someone else to lose a loved one in a moment, and what kind of trauma and pain would that person go through. Not only that, I thought about people with chronic illness. I struggle with chronic dizziness. Every moment of the day, I'm dizzy. And that happened from a basketball injury 11 years ago. And so even now, you know, as I'm talking to you, I'm dizzy all the time. It's not a vertigo spinning sensation, but I feel like I'm going to fall over all the time. And, you know, we all have different issues. And I thought, you know, where does preaching, where does pastoring enter into this? And it's really through what I try to lay out in the book as a process. And so I'll end there. But yeah, it's been a journey. It's going to continue to be a journey. And I think the hard part of trauma and pain is that it never goes away, really. Whether you have a chronic illness, you have a terminal illness, or you lose someone, the pain always comes back. There are waves. And so it's not like a one and done. I just went through the pain. I'm not going to go through that again. So those are some of the things I've been thinking of over these years. And that's what allowed me to think about writing that book.
I'd be curious to hear more about, so you've shared a little bit about your own experiences and what compelled you in that direction. But I also, undoubtedly, it's not just that you had those experiences, but that you had correlated experiences as you moved into the church and recognized a need for better education. Could you say a little bit more about the maybe the external pressures that pushed you to write this?
Well, you know, one of the things that I never thought would happen is that when I applied to my church in Denver, Colorado, the first search committee question to me to be the pastor of the church was, what do you think about in vitro fertilization? And, mm-hmm. and that was the very first question that they asked me, not about the deity of Christ or anything else. It was about, you know, something very practical, tangible. And later on, I finally realized after meeting some people that there were a handful of couples that couldn't conceive. And so this was a very personal issue in the church. And so the questions that people ask don't come out of nowhere. It always is usually very connected to their lives. And for that reason, I realized over time that, yes, I can provide Jesus as a solution. And ultimately for our sin issue, yes, Jesus is the solution. But in the midst of that, Jesus also tangibly met people where they were, whether it was physical hunger or some kind of illness, whatever it was. Jesus didn't just say, come to me for salvation. He first asked, what can I do for you? And it was usually some kind of physical immediate need that they had. So thinking about the model of Christ, which I hope is the best one, we're able to connect, where does scripture intersect with our lives? And where does scripture help us to see that we're all broken? Nobody comes to church with a perfect checklist of doing everything right that week. Everyone comes in broken. And so for me, I want to pause and think about preaching and pastoral ministry as, what can we do to allow people to grieve, to lament, to mourn, and that not every Sunday is celebration Sunday. And sometimes we do, as a family, need to do some hard work of allowing people to be where they are. And it's not always that there's a silver lining, which, you know, ultimately, yes, eschatologically, we all know where we're going if we're in Christ. But for the day to day, there's some real issues that we need to be able to acknowledge and hear about from our parishioners as we're thinking about preparing to preach them.
Well, Matt, can you tell us some of the chapters? And I know you also, I mean, I love the approach of the book because you have these topics, but then you also have some accompanying sermons. Is there one that really resonates to kind of illustrate what it means to have trauma-informed preaching? I mean, you can answer the theoretical question first if you'd prefer.
One of the things that I don't want people to get from this book is that every text has pain. Because I don't think that's true. And I'm not trying to put a hermeneutic on top of this book saying, you know, every passage has to talk about pain or every sermon has to talk about pain, because I don't think that's being faithful to the meaning of the passage as the original author intended it. At the same time, we want to be able to say there are different topics that we all struggle with. And so as I'm going through these different topics, such as, you know, one of the things that I thought was a little bit edgy was talking about the fact that because of our sin, we also suffer. And so that's one of the topics that we that I address in the book is how do we preach on sin and pain because of our sin? And so for me, all the topics just seem to come together in terms of just grouping things together. So, for example, loss or pain, some kind of illness, relational pain. There are all these different kinds of pains that people have that we often don't talk about in the sanctuary. And for me, it was a good reminder that we can slow down and think about even financial pain. A lot of people have financial pain. How do we address these things when it relates to the text? And so for the money issue, I remember writing a sermon on contentment in Christ. And, you know, having a church that was very wealthy, that I pastored in Colorado. Our nickname was Lagos Country Club because as soon as you walked in, as soon as you drove into the parking lot, you saw all the very expensive cars that were in the parking lot. And so for me, I was trying to think through, you know, how do we communicate this? And so that sermon on contentment, you know, it's funny. I wrote the book a few years ago, so I don't even remember which text it was. So let me go back and remind myself here. But basically, I was looking at a passage from Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians, I believe. Is it 1 Thessalonians? I'm trying to remember here. No, I'm sorry. Philippians. Sorry. Philippians 4, 10 to 20. And that sermon was really something where I was trying to grapple with the concept of contentment, which we all didn't have at the time. And we all struggle with in certain moments of our lives. So what I tried to do is attach pain or suffering or trauma to the particular Bible character or story or example that the text is providing for us in that moment. So even a sermon on Hagar from Genesis 16. So these are kind of the things like, you know, most people don't think about Hagar as a big Bible character, but an entire chapter is devoted to her story. And out of her story emerges an entire people group. So these are things that we have to recognize because Hagar has a lot of pain. And she's one character where I thought we could pause and think about who would connect with that kind of pain. Mm-hmm. Because the text is already talking about the pain. So then the second step would be who's actually living that out in my church?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kim, for being here. We really appreciate you being on the pod again, talking about this topic. And I liked how you mentioned Hagar, and I'm just reminded by how she names God as the God who sees, and how he sees her in her pain. And I like how, as you bring this topic of trauma-informed preaching and seeing people in their pain in your congregation and seeing like how they're coming to worship on Sunday. What do you think is the role of lament in corporate worship?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think we need to be sensitive to is the fact that there are probably many or at least several people in the church going through some kind of hardship right now, even as they're sitting there. And one of the things I'm a people pleaser. And so it's one of those things where you want to please everybody, but you recognize as you're surveying the congregation, some people are giving you looks and you don't know why they're giving you looks. And you realize later on as you talk to them that they're actually experiencing physical back pain. And so for them, even physically being in the church, sitting on a pew is not easy for them. And so their expression on their face is really about their own personal pain that they're going through, even as they're sitting in the worship service. And these are the kinds of things that most preachers, most pastors, we're oblivious to. We don't really think about it. We just want to make sure that we convey what God told us to convey to the people. And there's not, you know, of course, we want to be faithful with that. The second level of preaching, I think, or one of the secondary issues that we really want to be sensitive to is the fact that these are real people. They have real issues. You know, they have real problems. And church is often not the place that we talk about these things. And the pulpit is not the place where we talk about these things, because in the pulpit, I want to present Jesus as who he is. And I want everyone to follow Jesus. And what that means for us as parishioners is, don't worry about yourself. Don't worry about your problems. Just focus on Christ. And that has done a real disservice to us, I think. So lament for me is not only found in moments of silence. I think in the sanctuary, in the service, you can have a time of silence and say, what are your laments? I think first of all, we need to explain lament because most people don't know what lament is. So what is lament? Who practiced lament? Why should we practice lament? Allowing for space for people to be vulnerable and share emotion and not say sorry for it, because that's usually the first thing we say is you start crying and you say, I'm sorry. This shouldn't be a place where we're sorry for the pain that we're going through. And to have the entire congregation come together to support the person. Maybe we know that someone's going to have surgery for cancer that week. So why don't we take a moment to lament and cry out to the Lord? And then why don't we surround that church member and pray for them as a church family? These are ways that I think we can practice lament in a congregational setting. Silence, I think, is really important. Singing songs that are not always about I've got joy, joy, joy. And, you know, just having moments of space. I think creating space is the most important thing. And maybe as the preacher, I need to be the first one to show lament and allow them to see that from the pulpit or wherever, whoever the person is leading the service. And then you can model that for the entire church.
What would you say are some of the pitfalls of, trauma uninformed preaching, or some of the no-nos or your pet peeves when it comes to preaching and the sort of things that, you just wish, people, who are in these spaces with opportunities to preach, would avoid?
Mm. Well, one of the things I've noticed in one particular preacher, and, you know, I can be guilty of it myself, is when you have one dominant trauma in your life and that trauma emerges or shows up in every sermon or many sermons. So inserting that pain, because the pain is so deep within you, you haven't had the opportunity to evaluate it or think about, you know, how do I emerge out of this. And so for many preachers, they'll take whatever pain they're going through, whether it's loss or illness or whatever it is. And for some reason, the subject of the text of the sermon is not about that topic, but somehow that illustration or that example comes in all the time. And I feel for that because, you know, I love talking about my brother because I just want to remember him. And so I understand why preachers do that. I understand why a preacher is going to talk about her daughter dying from cancer. I understand these things, but these are some, it's not like a pet peeve, like, oh, shame on you for doing that, but really about not letting that dominant story or whatever immediate pain we're going through enter into every conversation in our sermon. So that would be one thing I think would be a pitfall or potential pitfall for doing that. Another thing is to make sermons hopeless. And what I mean by that is really being such a downer. You know, the whole sermon's about my pain or someone else's pain, and we never get to the hope of the gospel. So where is the hope found in the passage? Where is the hope in Christ. And these are the things that we need to remember, that not every sermon needs to do that. Not every sermon needs to be about suffering or pain or trauma. So those are a couple of things that come immediately to my mind.
Thanks, Matt. I really appreciate several of your answers so far. I appreciate at the beginning of your book, you have these different kinds of pain that you're kind of integrating. Your preaching is at this nexus of the listeners and the preacher. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more. I really appreciated the way that you talked about some of the helpful ways that preachers could bring their pain into their sermons, but also some of the harmful ways. And I think you've begun to touch on the latter in particular.
Yeah, it's such a delicate subject when we're talking about pain, because you don't want the listeners leaving thinking, was the preacher talking about me? And that can be easily done. And you may not even be thinking of that person in the sermon, but they might feel that way. Or I had one story from my wife where she told me she met with her pastor, and the following Sunday, that same story came up in his sermon without her permission. Her name wasn't mentioned, but she knew it was about her, because that was the exact scenario situation that she was describing. Pain is also something that's very personal to people, and in many ways a source of shame. We don't want to reveal these things. And so that can be another thing that we want to be mindful of, is who, and again, we want to be careful with the specifics that we name about a certain type of pain, so that nobody feels like we're directing it toward them or that they're the subject of our sermon. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think we've, as a culture, have forgotten is that Jesus, many of the stories about Christ are about his pain, especially obviously toward the end of his earthly ministry. And we're, as a culture, not too good about lingering in that pain. And so the more we can do that, I think we're being not only sensitive and correct in terms of our interpretation of the text, but also helping our listeners realize that Jesus is, he's with you in the pain that you're going through, that he knows. And you know, Madison, as a Hebrew scholar, Jesus identifies with us in our pain. And so what are we going to do with that? So my solution is, don't make Jesus the quick solution. Yes, Jesus is the ultimate savior of every part of our lives. And ultimately, we will have a new body in heaven, and all these things will happen when we get there. But in the meantime, what has Jesus shown us in his humanity, in his suffering, that we can identify with, so that we can encourage one another? And the whole purpose is for us to be a community that weeps and mourns and rejoices with each other.
Thank you, Matt. When I was reading the section about the preacher's pain, it struck me, again, you've talked about some of those pitfalls, but it's also the case that there have been some conversations about narcissistic leaders. My colleague Chuck DeGroat has written a book on that. And the ways that they leverage their own vulnerability in ways that ultimately are in service of their manipulation and harm. And so I wonder if you have some thoughts about that and how that plays a role in, or how preachers can be sensitive to that dynamic and sort of attuned to it, and still use their pain in positive ways or in helpful ways.
That's a great observation. And we are the only ones who know if we're trying to manipulate people. And that's the tricky part, is as a preacher, I know when I'm trying to manipulate, but at the same time, I don't even know what I'm manipulating for. that's the question, is why do I manipulate people? What am I trying to get out of this rehearsing of the same story? Or do I tell a tragic story about some child in a different country just because I want more offering. I mean, that's one of the classic scenarios of the reasons why we do that. Or, we want to be the hero of every sermon, and have people look good, look well upon us in our lives. And we're the example, the hero, and those kinds of things. I'm sure it does happen, and I'm sure I've done it. We're all fallen people. We're all fallen preachers. We do sometimes. One of the ways I think we know if we're doing that is if we exaggerate. I think exaggeration is one of the key ways to know, am I trying to manipulate people for one reason or another? It could be just simply the fact that I want people to like me, or I want to be seen in a positive light. And so these are some basic, you know, things that we can think about. And I have that, you know, we all have that tendency to want to sensationalize a story so that people respond and in whatever way that is. So I think exaggeration is one of those gray areas where we really want to be careful. Am I exaggerating even another zero just to make it sound like it's a better story? That kind of thing. We can play on people's emotions in different ways. I think also that one of the things that I need to be careful of is as I share my story about whether it's my brother or my glaucoma, that's one of the areas where I've struggled is talking to people about my glaucoma, where I've lost a lot of peripheral vision. And so if I share that story, I remember one time I was guest preaching and probably about 12 ladies came up to me, older ladies, and started shaking my hand. They're like, "We've made it this far. You'll be okay." You know, and they all had glaucoma. So, you know, what does that do, though? What does that do? I mean, other than the fact that we can all lament having glaucoma together, how does this story point us to Jesus? I think that's one of the questions we need to be asking. Is this trauma that I'm revealing or sharing, well, what is the purpose of me sharing that? And if there's nothing that leads to greater discipleship, then I don't think we need to keep telling that same story or even introducing it for the first time. And again, this really, Madison, comes on to the heart issue of the preacher. Why am I telling this story? And what am I trying to get out of it by telling the story? So yeah. It doesn't lead to greater discipleship and focusing on Jesus and Christ-likeness. Do we really need that story?
So to follow up with that question, what are some ways that preachers can develop that self-awareness to understand like what their motivations are for telling those stories?
Wow. You know, self-awareness is so tricky because we don't know what we don't know about ourselves. So Terry Linhart has really written a really good book for IVP called The Self-Aware Leader. And basically talking through blind spots and how do blind spots become more open and open to us as the preacher leader. And it really would be helpful. Now, this is a practice that most people don't like, is to record your sermon and listen to it. So have your sermon on video, audio, or whatever you have available for your church, and to go back and listen to it. And one of the things that you'll see is your facial expressions, especially on video, and you can think through, why did I look like that? Or why did I make that face? Or why is my body posture like that? And as you're doing that, that will help you see, as you're hearing your sermon in the content of that, how does the content match what I'm trying to convey with my tone, my body language, my facial expressions? And maybe that will trigger in our minds, why did I say it like that? Or why did I include that? Beyond that, I mean, we have hopefully preaching coaches are available. You can have someone, you know, a lot of times those coaches are not free, but you could find them. Or if you have someone that's on your elder board or your pastoral staff, you can talk to them about your sermon and say, hey, when I was talking about this, what did you sense in my tone or what did you sense in me? And just get some observations that way. Those are some ways that I think are very practical. Even you could even, as a pastor, you can audit a preaching class at your local seminary or Bible college and say, hey, I really want to work on this aspect of my preaching. Would you be able to help me out? So I think those are some ways that you can try to get at the blind spots that we often don't see because they are blind spots.
So with trauma-informed preaching, to what degree, do you want to also think about how certain topics and themes, certain Bible passages might be triggering for some people as they deal with, you know, spiritual trauma, religious trauma, things that they've, had to deal with, maybe have deconstructed or whatever. To what degree is that factoring into your preparation as you think about the kind of strategies or tactics of how to address certain topics or whether to leave some to the side?
I heard a teacher, I believe it was an instructor, talk about how every time they have a lecture, when they have the PowerPoint on the screen, the professor, who was a female, she said, I have a trigger warning for every lecture. And I mentioned some of the categories or topics that I'm going to talk about that day. And if this is going to be triggering for you, please leave the room. You're welcome to do so. And that might be one of the ways that we can try as preachers to let people know in advance that I'm going to be talking about a hard subject today. And if this is something that would be hard for you to listen to and make you uncomfortable, you're welcome to step out. But beyond that, I haven't really seen preachers actively let people know about what might be triggering, because something's triggering for everyone. So you don't want everyone to leave the congregation, leave the worship space. But there are certain topics of abuse and those kinds of things that can be really harmful for someone not expecting that on a Sunday morning. That might be a place where you could have it in a bulletin. You might always let the congregation know that in the bulletin, you'll find some different trigger categories that might be coming up in my sermon today, so that they have some advance notice. But I haven't seen people do that very often or well. So that's a great question, John. I think that's something that we need to explore further, as pastors and leaders.
I wonder if there are some examples of preachers who do some of these things really well, you know, people that you've heard and that you really appreciate who are trauma-informed.
I want to be careful how I say this. I don't want to stereotype or make it sound like everyone does it well in this group, but I think that in general, African-American preachers are more naturally attuned to it. And I think they're more naturally aware that certain topics, certain passages are very sensitive to that community. And I think they do a good job of acknowledging that somewhere in the sermon. This may be hard for you to hear, and they'll acknowledge that pain in the room. I think more cultures can learn from them. From my context as an Asian American, we're not so good about that. We tend to shame those who are feeling ashamed, if I can say it that way. And so it's not really helpful. We could do a better job of that. And being okay with being uncomfortable. These are topics that are really hard for different communities. And because of the Asian American hiding our shame and saving face, these concepts where we're really not really comfortable talking about these topics. The more we can make it normative, and the more we can, for example, like mental health, the more we can make it normative to talk about, then we release people from the shame that they might be feeling. And those are some ways, I think, as a culture, regardless of what ethnic diversity is in the room, we might be able to improve on those areas. But that's a great question. I haven't really thought about who does it well or who's been doing it. But I know that in general, the African-American preachers that I know and have heard, they're just naturally more insightful in that area.
I'm curious what some of the strategies are for becoming more trauma-informed in our preaching, some of the things beyond what you've named here, because it sounds like the knowledge of oneself is one part of it. But there are ways that we need to know what our congregations are experiencing as well. Could you say a little bit about how a good preacher is attending to the needs of their specific congregation and, of course, integrating that with the text?
So when you think about coming up with basically a list of all the different types of pain and trauma in the room, in the book, I talk about maybe we can create some kind of Excel spreadsheet. I know it sounds really nerdy and precise, but either a sheet of paper or some kind of document where we list what are some individual and collective traumas right now that people are going through, or what are some things that were never resolved, but they were elephants in the room that we never really talked about. And just making a list of that as a pastor would be a good practice. And to be able to document when did this trauma happen for the church? And for example, if there was some kind of pastoral staff issue that caused division, or if there was some kind of death in the congregation or illness or whatever it is, we can just make notes of it in our document and keep a log of that so that we know, generally speaking, where are people hurting? And that would be a good practice, I think, for most pastors to do because of our tendency to make it all about the happy sermon and having a happy ending every time. As I think about another area that I've tried to implement as a pastor when I was a pastor was taking out my membership list and just praying through everybody's names. And usually the Spirit would give me something, some kind of sense of how they're doing, or at least give me the nudge to say, follow up with that person. Hmm. And those are some things that I think we don't talk enough about with preaching, especially because we think of preaching so mechanically in terms of method. But really, the preaching comes out of the pastoral heart, the pastoral life. And so the more I'm able to pray for my listeners and my people, meet with them and hear, how are they doing? What are they going through right now? And jotting those things down will really help you have a long-term ministry where, in many ways, when you see the Old Testament and you see all these, towers of rocks that they made, the pillars of rocks that are made, these remembrances, that's for a reason, and it's to remember God's faithfulness, that God can deliver these people. God has delivered people in the past, and God will continue to do that for me and my congregation. And so these are some things that I think, practically speaking, we don't like to do because, let's just be honest, many of us are lazy. we don't want to have to do that. But that I think can be something that we don't have to write down every little thing. But maybe just take an inventory of, what are some things going on in the church? What are 4 to 5 things going on right now, whether it's individual or corporate?
Thank you, Matt. I wonder, thinking about going forward, what are some of the ways that, just to sort of wrap up our conversation, what are some of the things that you're attentive to, or some of the ways that you're wanting to improve your own preaching and becoming trauma-informed?
I think one of the struggles is after you've been preaching for a while, you just keep thinking, I'm a decent preacher. What can I improve? But obviously we're all growing. We're always trying to get better at what we do. I think that one of the things that I would never wish for someone else is to go through different types of trauma and pain. But it was only really through what I have been going through and went through that I was able to see other people's pain. Mm. And I don't wish that for anyone. I don't wish any kind of pain for anybody else. But as naive as I was, I think that a lot of times we forget as preachers that there are people really hurting out there. Having plenty for myself, those who have full stomachs don't see the people who are hungry. And in the same way, I think for me, my preaching ministry has really slowed down, obviously, as a professor, But even when I do preach once in a while, one of the things I try to take some time to do is just sit and reflect and think about what are people going through today, right now? And as you know, as we're going into that election season later this year, I think that that's where people are feeling really anxious. And so how do we as preachers think about where are people, you know, how are we divided? What are some of the things that we can think about in terms of unity? How can I preach in a way that both sides will hear me? These are questions that I ask myself. And it really comes down to my own heart and tone. So I'm trying to improve in those two areas all the time. And also just getting deeper in the word. A lot of times I think some of my sermons have been shallow and I haven't really addressed what God was saying in that text. So these are some ways I've been trying to improve. One of the things that I've been struggling with for 20 years or more has been getting better at storytelling. And so I'm not a good storyteller, and my wife tells me it's because I don't read fiction. I'm trying to get better at it, and I try to listen to preachers who are good storytellers, but that's another aspect I think that I could get better at. And, so yeah, Madison, I'm always working on it. There's always things to improve, and, we all just want to be faithful.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate you being open with us and being willing to share some of those things, because I have no doubt that you're stimulating some areas of growth for other preachers who are listening. Certainly, that's true for me. So thank you for joining us. This has been a sincere pleasure.
I love Two Cities, and this has been a great time to spend with you thinking about these things and you asking great questions. So thank you so much for your time.